got the one and only Josh Bartelstein on the podcast today, Executive VP of Operations, Chief of Staff of the Pistons. That is a hefty title, dude.
It sounds a lot better than it is. They just put a bunch of words there, but I appreciate it. So I've been following all your guests. So I was waiting for when I was going to get the invite, so I'm honored.
Oh, I mean, I hope this thing goes long enough. You'll be back. Don't even worry. And I want to get you, me, and Novak on one. Like, we could do some fun things with it.
I'm all in.
We were talking a little bit before I started this recording. You said you went to the game last night, which is the first game, right, that you really
It was the first game I've been to this year. I mean, being in Michigan, there's such strict requirements on attending games. So they have I think it's 500 people allowed to go to our Pistons game through a Michigan game. So I luckily was able to go. Must be bad luck. So I probably shouldn't go again.
Obviously.
But we can talk about what transpired.
I know you know they're good and like you've probably seen some stuff and you know they have talent, but what did you see last night?
Yeah. I mean, look, you and I always joke about it. Like over the course of what I think that was game 20, like you're going to have games you just aren't going to win, right? Like the ball just don't make shots. The ball doesn't go in. So I think Michigan, like they've played amazing basketball all year. They're probably due for a game they weren't going to play well. And you got to give Illinois a lot of credit. Like, but they had a really good game plan. Michigan runs a ton of really good stuff. Like Juwan has them, you know, they have a bunch of free throwing motion to get in the ball screens. Like Illinois got up into them and took them out of that stuff. And then Illinois has a big guy who can kind of bang with Hunter, right? Like most teams, Hunter can bury you and he gets to his left hand and he's got a layup. They pushed Hunter out away from the basket. And so much what Michigan does is a little bit push back and, you know, 10, 15 years ago, but they play out of the post. And those are efficient when they're layups, not as efficient when they're hook shots. So I think you got to give Illinois a lot of credit, even without Io. They made plays, and I thought they had a really good game plan. And Michigan had one of those games where, you know, the ball didn't go in enough, and they struggled. And that happens over the course of a long season. But they put themselves in a great position, and I think, you know, they got one of the next two to win the Big Ten, and that's quite an accomplishment with all the things they've been through. And as loaded as the Big Ten is, it's a really, really good conference.
Yeah, especially going against Michigan State. Like, those back-to-back games are going to be – I feel bad for Michigan State. Like, just the first game back, that's going to be a vengeance for Michigan. But yeah, they've obviously been impressive. Juwan's been impressive. Have you had any interactions with Juwan?
I've a little bit. Like, I couldn't be more impressed. He's such a personable guy. Like, you just see the way his players speak about him. His brand, what he stands for, I think so ties to Michigan. He's a player's coach. His players love playing for him. I thought CJ Baird, the walk-on, I'm always looking out for walk-ons, but it was funny. He tweeted after they beat IU at Bloomington, which is a big win. Anytime you win there, those are hard games. I guess CJ couldn't sit on the bench because maybe they have a limited amount of people who can be there. And the first thing Joan did after a big win was turn around and point to CJ, who I guess drove down just to kind of take the game in and support. And like, that says a lot about Coach Howard, right? Like, he could have been hugging his star players, like, you know, going to the handshake line. But it's the first thing he does is be like, I respect CJ for making the drive. I think that says so much about him and what the program stands for as far as everyone being empowered and having a big role. So brand-wise, recruiting speaks for itself. He just gets it. And I think everyone said, well, that's the nose he's going to struggle with, or he's never been a first-time head coach. Like, if you watch them play, they run great stuff. Like, they run an NBA offense. It's dribble handoffs, pick and rolls. They have weak side action to soften up the defense. Defensively, they're really good. They get up into you. They have multiple coverages. Like, I don't know what else you could ask for. I think he's been so incredibly impressive in kind of anything you could ask him to do. What do you think?
And he's got the talent. Like, he is an NBA manager. And, like, anything I've ever heard from NBA guys and, you know, even in college, really it's just managing egos and getting everyone to mesh together. And, like, Juwan knows exactly how to do that. I think he's been doing that since his days at Michigan. Like, he was always, like, a point big man type guy in that sense. So,
and, like, think about, like, his track record. Like, I mean, he's going to be the number one coach on every – whether you're NBA or college. But, like, you know, really, really successful NBA career. Unbelievable NBA career.
Yeah.
Then goes into coaching, like, cuts his teeth, does player development, works his way up, lead assistant from Miami, one of the best programs in the NBA under Spoelstra. Then says, like, I'll go into college and, like, you know, I'll go be a head coach. I'll prove it to everyone. The NBA didn't want to give him a head job right away. Goes to Michigan, has unbelievable success in 2 years, builds the maintains the program where Elon left it and rises it in recruiting five-star players. And now he's got the number two team in the country. And now he's his own operator. He's the CEO of Michigan. That's where the head coach is. So like, when you're looking at what at a head coach resume, like Juwan's, he's done everything. Like there's nothing else you could possibly ask for that he hasn't done at this point.
Yeah. I talked to Saudi Washington and he's like, yeah, Juwan just stepped in the door and got hit, got respect right away. Like there was no BSing or playing games with the guys. Like he just demands respect when he walks into a room. And I think, you know, especially with a guy like Beilein where it's system offensive oriented and, you know, these plays and like system and like sets are going to win you games. And it's like, no, talent wins you games. First of all, yeah. Like you see that every year that happens, you can overachieve with system and discipline and stuff. But like, if you really want to be the top echelon of programs, which Michigan does, like that's talent. And that's, you know, Beilein ended up learning how to manage those guys, 2013 team, 17 team, like, there's a reason. So like Juwan,
I think talent trumps all. Like people always ask me like, why was your team so good? Besides me waving the towel on the bench, like when you have Trey Burke who can like pull up from 2 feet inside half court and make a three against Kansas, or like that's you need systems and process can get you to a certain level. But then you got to have guys who, when the shot clock's going down, you can go 1-4 low and go hit a step back shot, or the defense is kind of packed in and he goes and crosses someone up and dumps it up for layup. Like you got to have pros who can get buckets. And like those Beilein teams, like we ended up with 7 NBA players. Like it's unbelievable. And that's why even this team of Michigan, like who knows how many of these guys are pros, but it's a testament to the team that like they play so well together. That's maybe the one flaw you could say with Michigan is like, who's the guy when the shot clock's down, when it's a half court game, who are they giving the ball to? It's like, go get me a basket. Right? And where's their offense coming? I think you maybe saw that last night. It's like that's where when the game slows down, how do they create good shots for themselves or for others on their team?
Yeah, and I was talking about this last night with Jeff Goodman and Rob Doster, and it's like now they know, you know, I think Isaiah Livers knows, Franz Wagner knows, like that's when you guys have to step up. Like you guys got to be the guys that do it. You can't just look around. But that's the funny part with college basketball and like the 30-second shot clock. We had 35 where it's like you could just pass for 25 seconds and then you're like kind of looking at each other for the next 10 seconds. You're like, oh, we forgot to shoot. So it's like, no, just go make a play.
Yeah, no, you gotta go make a play. And that's what it is. It's making plays. So I think, I mean, it's one of those games for Michigan. I have no doubt they'll bounce back tomorrow. Michigan State's tough and it's a rivalry.
Yeah.
So you throw everything out the door, but Michigan's really, really good. So it should be a fun march watching them.
Yeah, it's going to be super fun. You mentioned CJ Bear, the walk-on. You were a walk-on. It is a very unsung position, a very beaten-down position. You know, really get no love and kind of recognition that Juwan did for CJ is really nice. I know Beilein, you know, I've read so many nice words that Beilein said about you, and I've always appreciated what you did for our teams. But I'm curious what it was like being a walk-on playing, you know, for the scout team against the first team when I was there versus that 2013 team. Like, could you even get the better of them on some days?
I joke, like, the reason Trey always had a lot of confidence playing is because, like, I was the one guarding Trey Monday through Friday, and then Saturday he'd be like, well, at this point, I haven't missed a shot all week.
Yeah.
It was a little different. As much as I love you, Stu, guarding you versus guarding Trey or Tim Hardaway there's just a different level of athlete that I had to go against. But you said it, like it's an underappreciated role, but the Beilein was so good with it. And you guys were too, right? Like our team treated everyone the same, whether you were averaging 20 or weren't playing at all.
Yeah.
Everyone was treated like, you know, you were a star in your role. And that's what Beilein said, like be a star in your role and you're appreciated for it. So, and it shows, like, I mean, being named captain my senior year as a walk-on, like most programs probably wouldn't do that just because of stigma to it, but it shows everyone had an even playing field. And if you kind of worked hard and played and did what was expected, like you had a chance to play and contribute and be a part of Michigan basketball. So like it goes back to when I was being recruited, right? Like Dave Merritt and CJ Lee were the two point guards and those were both former walk-ons. So when I was going to Michigan, part of the reason why I went there, because I had some scholarship offers, was like, Elon's like, if you earn it, like you're going to play. Like I literally am playing two walk-ons now and we're building this program up and the best players will play. You may have to work a little harder. A tie is probably going to go to a scholarship player, but if you beat them out, I have no problem playing you. And you saw that the best players played and Coach B gave everyone opportunities. It was an amazing experience. Like you couldn't, as a kid growing up in Chicago, you couldn't ask for anything else. Getting to play in Michigan, playing the Big Ten and all the success we had and the great people we had on our team.
Yeah, I mean, I had all the respect in the world for Dave and CJ, you know, from day one. And that plays a big part that, you know, if you have respect, you have respect. It doesn't matter if you got on a scholarship or not. So I know my answer to this question, but I want you to kind of go into how you were able to lead from that position, because it's not easy. It's not easy for guys to listen to you. Like, where does that confidence come from? Did you have conversations with D-line? Kind of go into that a little bit.
Yeah, I think you, it's a great question. You probably can't be the, if your only leader is a walk-on who's not playing, your team's probably going to struggle, right? So like what I knew right away when B-line was like, you're going to be the captain is like, big part of my job was getting Tim and Trey to become captains by the end of the year, because our best version of our team was going to be following those two guys. I knew I had like the respect of the locker room because I'd been there for my fourth year and worked really hard, was always around. So when I said something, my voice resonated, and they knew I had seen a lot of stuff from struggling our first year to winning a Big Ten championship. But we put something in place. We're going to also have a revolving captainship where different guys for different games would step up and be captain. And for that reason, that I knew by the end of the year in the captain circle, Tim and Trey, those two guys had to be standing right with me. And Corey Purse and Matt Bogridge, like all the seniors, played a huge role in that. So I think the key to it is kind of empowering those guys, you know, picking and choosing my spots, but knowing when you're not playing, you can't get on guys the same way when you're playing 32 minutes and diving for loose balls. So
right.
I would say things when I knew I needed to say it and would hold people accountable, but I would also, you know, put things in Trey and Tim's there to say to other people, because I knew when they said it, it would mean more and kind of push them up. And I think that's what good leaders do, is it can't always be your voice. You got to know it means more coming from certain individuals, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's brilliant. And that's just coaching 101 to me. Yeah. Like, you know, when a coach knows that a player needs to say something to the team instead of them, I think, yeah, from day one, I always recognized that you were observant and what you were saying was, even if you weren't right, it was going to be like a different angle. Like, you were always paying attention in a way that I respected. And I was like, all right, this will be easy. Yeah. Like, if you don't go into being an agent, or you're
You said like it's observing, and I think the thing that really can come from not playing is there's no emotion. I'm hearing that echo, Stu. You got it. There's no emotion in it. So like when you're playing and like you're like 1-for-7, like you get on your, like you get so frustrated. But like me sitting on the chair on my bench seat very comfortably, I can kind of take it all in and not have the emotion of like my own going through my own game. Like even when I play pickup now, like if I'm playing bad, I get so frustrated. So it's so hard for players to lead when they're playing, because when they're struggling, they just worry about themselves. And what I could do is have much wider lens, a huge perspective, and be like, I see what's happening. I can go up to Trey and be like, I know you're 1-for-7, but like, go tell Nick Stauskas this, go tell Mitch McGarry this, because I'm seeing it. And those guys are in their own head. It's hard to lead sometimes.
For sure. I'll never forget when we lost to Ohio my senior year. We got upset and just got off the plane in Ann Arbor, and Kathleen Beeline comes up to me and she's like, it must be such a big relief, like, to finally be done. And I was like, you know, it's not a normal question, because normally it'd be like sad, you know, we had such high hopes, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, it kind of is, because to be worried about, like, Zach and I's job was to be leading for everyone and then let Tim and Trey just do play basketball, and like to do both jobs can be very draining. And so another question I have for you is how, because Tim and Trey are very much guys where it's like throw the ball up and they're just going to do what they do, right? Like talent, they're just so talented and athletic, like think they're just going to take over. I mean, Trey, his freshman year, I mean, I don't really remember him saying too many words, and he didn't have to. Like, we knew exactly what he was going to do. He knew what he was going to do in the court. So did you see that evolve from a leadership standpoint? But at the same time, it was probably like a little easier because you guys were so talented. Like maybe it didn't take quite the leadership that it did for like maybe like, you know, our teams when I was there.
Yeah, I mean, our margin for error was so much greater, right? Like I always view basketball through like a prism of bell curve, like margin for error. Like the better talent you have, the bigger margin for error. The more threes you shoot, the more defensive versatility you have where you can play different coverages. You're better, your shot spectrum is where you take layups and threes. Like you have a better chance, even when you're not playing your A game, you're playing your C game, but the other team's playing well, like you can still beat them. So that's how I always think of things. Our team was so good, like our margin for error was massive because we had six pros. So like if Tim didn't have a good game, like we had Nick Stauskas and Mitch McGarry could have a really good game. We had Glenn Robinson, who I've been talked about, Caris LeVert. So we could just keep coming at you. And then we played such a good style. Like Coach Beilein was so far ahead of the curve as far as we were playing spread, pick and roll with shooters all around before that really was the NBA mold 10 years ago. So like we would just kind of come at you in waves and just barrage threes. And there were certain games like you weren't going to beat us because we were going to hit 18 threes in a game and have too much talent. So I would agree the leadership probably wasn't as hard, but it's also the key is when you have that much talent, keeping everyone happy, right? And I always thought like it's through lens of like, I always told our guys, like, you will get the most recognition when we win. Like, averaging 17, but on a team that's 500 versus averaging 12, nothing makes it to the final four. Like, they're going to see the role you play. They're going to extrapolate out your talent. Like, Glenn Robinson was so talented, but his usage wasn't super high because we had all these guys. So, like, he wasn't going to average 18 points a game. But I would be like, Glenn, like, we're going to see how good you are, man. Like, you're a prototypical wing. You can guard multiple positions. You play downhill. Like, they'll see that. So, there was a point where everyone's like, we have all the pieces to win. If we just buy in and kind of fulfill our roles and don't get greedy and try to kind of step on people's toes, we can be really, really good.
And that's such a good point as well that you obviously understand and laid out very eloquently is that you have to manage people where they're at. Like, you can't manage everyone the same. You can't coach everyone the same. You got to go to them and coach them where they're at. And that plays a huge part because you guys had so many freshmen that are talented and like, you know, you can start to get big heads and you got real guys in. So it is an interesting position. Yeah, that
I think like in any team, any company, like role definition is so critical, right? We're like, And it's not just that player knowing the role, it's the entire team, right? Like you get sitting around in a team meeting and be like, Stu, like this is your job. We appreciate you for it. Everyone's going to hear it. And like your job is to, you shoot. So like if you miss your first five threes, your job is to shoot the sixth. And that way, like, when you take that six, your teammates are empowering you, being like, shoot, like, Stu, like, keep shooting. And there's guys who, like, your job is to rebound, run the court, set screens. So, like, when you take a bad shot and I take you out, the team's going to know why. And I think it's transparency that everyone knows what it is. And then you can be held accountable for either living up to what you're doing or not living up to what you're doing.
Yeah, definitely. Beautifully put. Josh, I'm wondering why you don't have a full size picture of you standing with your arms in the air with Trey shooting the ball.
That's like probably the best thing I've ever done. I still get things about that. There was a, I can see into the future.
I'm surprised you don't have like a big mural, honestly, like on your mantle. And people are like,
it's right over. I have the Josh Bartelstein shrine right over here. So you just can't see it yet. But there's a lot of J Bart material over here.
Okay, well, then what are you doing, man? You got to get that on camera.
I gotta keep a level head. You know, I can't be having the J Bart shrine behind the camera.
You should have seen Novak's. It was his jersey, and then like a little portrait of his dog, like a nice little like art piece. Like that's dude. Remember when they called you the scientist, and we had your scientist post on our mantle?
That was a great. I enjoyed that picture. That was on College Game Day where they. That was the chemist mixing all the, you know, getting everyone to work well together. Chemist scientist, but it was the chemist because they said, my job is to get everyone to kind of coexist together. And they made it on College Game Day. So that's one of the claims to fame.
I have a buddy, Joe, and big Purdue fan, loves basketball. And he actually came. You met him one time.
I know who you're talking about.
He still calls you the chemist to this day. Like, I mean, a couple months ago, we were talking about you and he goes like, oh yeah, the chemist. I was like, yep. That's tough.
I struggle with science, but if I like the chemist, I'm happy to keep that. But science was never a strong suit.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get into, we mentioned Zach, and for people that don't know, Josh, Zach, and I lived together for 2 years. It was a lot of fun, not super crazy, but enough fun for college. I mean, how was that living with both of us? We're very different people.
I think we go. Like a lot we haven't talked about, like, so you and Zach, I was a freshman, you two are sophomores. You and Zach are already living together. Yep. So after my, like, midway, and when I first came in there, you're both like, who's this, like, kid from the suburbs? Like, you know, like, is he a walk-on? Is he going to make it? So, like, I had, like, prove myself that, like, I was going to stick around. Then halfway through the year, I wasn't going to live off campus because my grades were good enough and Coach B was going to say it. So I had to convince you and Zach to move from your two-bedroom to a 3-bedroom house. And like you guys both use that as leverage. It was like, well, if we're going to move for you to move off campus, like we're paying less rent. And Zach's like, I want the parking garage and you got to get us groceries. And like, I wasn't going to stay in the dorm. So I was like, I have zero leverage. I'm going to have to just do what I want to do to move out. So like Zach got their master bedroom somehow. He swindled that. I'd like get a PS3 for the house. So I finally convinced both of you. I'm like, I promise it'll be like, we'll have fun together. I'm a good guy. And then it all exploded after that in a good way. But it was probably the most fun 2 years of my life. I mean, just from getting to play college basketball and two of my best friends and living together and whether it was a tough practice or tough loss or winning the Big Ten. If those walls could speak, there's just so many memories of, three college kids getting to live their dreams of playing college basketball at the highest level. And like the three of us, like, I mean, you and Zach played and have unbelievable careers, but like when you grew up and, you're from Indiana, like thinking you could play at Michigan and start and win a Big Ten championship, like we were all living out our dreams. And probably when we were younger, like that probably wasn't something that we thought was realistic, right?
No, for sure. And every passing day, you get more appreciation for it. That is for sure. For the record, I did not negotiate any of those things. I was happy paying whatever rent I needed to. That was all Zach. That was all Zach.
Zach negotiated a lot. And I had to take the garbage out. I mean, it was the amount of things on this list of what I had to do for him to consider making the switch.
He's always been a man of business. That is from day one. I knew that with him. The NBA package, though, I was always very appreciative of that. You and me watched a lot of NBA.
There were perks, whether it was meals, NBA package, good story time, making drinks when we were over 21. I brought some good things to the table.
Dude, I will never forget. Like, I vividly remember it when we were in our, the old training room that was just off the hallway of Chrysler.
Yeah, the worst training room of the Big Ten.
You were in there, right, to start because your hip?
Yeah, I had lots of issues.
Of course. But you were in there and we were talking to you and, you're kind of, you're like getting your ground, your feet on the ground there and like trying to settle in. And you're like making sure we know that you can dunk and we're athletic. And you're like, I bet I can dunk better than you, Zach. And Zach's like, he's like little chuckle. And he's like, Josh, shut the hell up. You don't know what you're talking about. He's like, no, I think I can. And then, Zach like wins the dunk contest basically.
Yeah, that was a tough start. Zach won the dunk contest, right? Our Midnight Madness that we did 1 year. That he should put that high on his resume that he won a dunk contest.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, which is probably more of a testament to Manny didn't do it because it was hamstring, I think. But very impressive by Zach. Very impressive.
I mean, the thing with Manny is people still don't even know how athletic he was.
And just so good. Manny was so good.
Ridiculous. I'm still upset. He never made the Cavs when he should have.
Manny was a big-time NBA talent. He could do a lot of things.
Yeah, he was. I'll never forget the first time. It was the first week of workouts, and he is like taking. It's just rip through, right? Rip through from the top of the key, and he's getting like 3 feet below the free throw line on a rip through from the top of the key, 3-point line. And I'm like, can I get to the elbow? Like, I don't even know. Like, how does this dude do it? And it was just like natural.
Covers so much ground. He could finish with either hand at the rim. His shot got better. I mean, he was hurt his whole – that was his sophomore, junior year. But he was hurt the whole year with his hamstring. But, I mean, that guy was so good.
He's the reason we got out of running the mile.
Yeah, 100%. It changed. I probably wouldn't have made it through all 4 years if our fall ball program, which was all stuff on the track, 220s, 440s, the mile, if we would have kept that for the duration of my career, I'm not sure I could have made it through it.
I did it how many times? Twice. And I was like, that's it. Like, we got to convince him. Otherwise,
your body just falls apart.
Oh, yeah, easily. I'll never forget, too. We won't get into it, but we've had our run-ins with Manny. Some people can look it up. They know your run-in. And then, mine was that I was pestering him the first week of open gym in the summer. And he, like, kind of squared up with me. Like, he was like, you need to stop, Stuart. Like, please, you don't want to take this too far. I'm like, I'm just trying to learn how to play defense against it was like an NBA athlete right in front of me. And I'm like, okay, let's like, we're going to play hard. But it's like, nah, open gym.
The best Manny story is, and Manny's a great guy. Like, he's a really, really good guy with a big heart. He let us, so Matt Vogrich and I are living South Quad, like first week in the freshman year. And we're like, we're coming home from practice. He's like, just don't take the bus, take my car for the night. I'll go home with Deshaun. So Matt and I are like huge, like we'll take Manny's car. You know, it's like star of the team. Like we're very nervous driving his car. We don't want to bump into anything, crash it. So we drive his car, we park it in front of South Quad, and Bogert is driving. And I'm like, Matt, like we have to pay the parking meter. He's like, no, like it's past seven. We're good. Let's just go eat dinner. We'll get it in the morning and we'll go to practice the next day. Go to sleep, wake up the next day. Car is gone. Nowhere to be found. So I'm calling. I'm like, Matt, what happened? Like, man, he's going to kill us. Like this man, he's the big man on campus, like star of the basketball team, loved. And yeah, we're preseason ranked 15. Like he's a big dude. And car is nowhere to be found. Like there's no sign of it. And what are we going to say to the guy? So like Matt and I are freaking out, like walk to Chrysler, just like trying to figure out what we're going to say. And it's like, Manny, like, we're so sorry. We don't know what happened. Like we have your keys. And sure enough, Manny's like, no, I know what happened. Like I had a parking ticket. They towed my car, but they already called me. I'm getting it back. Guys, you shouldn't worry about it. It's totally my fault. And I mean, Matt, I thought it was me off the team. I thought it was over. But I'll never forget the look on Matt and I's face when we walked outside and just we're like looking at the spot and like there's just no car there.
I can see you managing Matt and Matt just being like, either Matt was like, eh, whatever, it's fine, or just complete freak out, like something's bad's gonna happen.
This was before, like, we were so young and like it's Manny. If it was like your car, we'd be like, sorry, Stu. But we were just so nervous and so scared, but he couldn't have been better about it.
No, yeah, he was a cool guy. He was always very very giving in that way, that is for sure. We want to talk to you a little bit about your book and some of your blog. I won't get into it too much, but one of my favorite stories that I was just looking up recently was the one where you were in a, I think it was 2013 team, you're in a hotel, and then in like the ballroom or some conference room next door was a bar mitzvah.
Yeah.
And you were explaining kippahs and the talis to people. Yeah. And I'll never forget, like, you know, where I am Jewish. I got my Israeli passport.
Yeah, you've come a long way.
You had your bar mitzvah, but you know, I was still learning stuff from you. And like, there was no Jewish kids on the basketball team. And like, it was like a shock to everyone on the team.
Yeah, no, that's my claim to claim to fame there. It's the only Jewish kid on the team. No, that was my job. And like, another really funny story is we were playing at Clemson. And Coach B, you know, Coach B would always play new because he's big on like religion and knowing people's culture and background. This is a great story. And he's like, J-Bart, he's like, J-Bart, do you want to say a Jewish prayer before we eat dinner? Because we always would say a prayer before dinner. And he didn't like prepare me. So my mom's gonna be so mad, but I'm like, all right. Like, he's like, just say a long, nice long prayer, like good health, have a good meal, good luck tomorrow. I have no idea. So I just start making up words, just putting things together. Makes zero sense. Everyone's buying it though. Like people are nodding their head. It sounds nice. And everyone's like, oh, they're so into it. And then, so I make up like just a bunch of words for 20 seconds. And then Coach B's like, so what did you say? I'm like, well, I said, let's, you know, bless this food and we eat together and wishing everyone good health tomorrow. We're going to play Michigan basketball. And everybody's like, well, that's beautiful, Josh. Like you should do it every game. I'm like, no, not do every game, but once in a while I'll do it. And I just remember being like, I literally did not say one thing that made sense.
I mean, you're lucky that he didn't ask you to like teach him Hebrew or something, but I will never forget. Another vivid memory was you saying that you stood up and then it was me and Zach sitting next to you and you were sitting next to us. And then you like walked back to us or like at the table and like, we're like, what did you say? And you gave your patented J-Bart wry smile and you're like, nothing. I don't know. I don't know what I said.
I have no idea what I said, but yeah, like the bar mitzvah, we walk into the hotel and like I see these lights and these young kids. I'm like, you know, and I see a couple of kippahs. I'm like, oh, it's right in my alley because I could teach everyone what was going on. And people were so into it. Like they're like, they're seventh graders dancing and they're playing games. And then once they found out the Michigan basketball team was there, like, oh, we want you guys to come in. And I was like, that's a bad idea. We're definitely not doing that. But they just couldn't understand. I was like, it's like a Sweet 16. Think of it like a Sweet 16 party just out of the Jewish religion. But they ate it up. It was very fun. There was music was playing the midnight. So our team could, and everyone wants to have their bar mitzvah now. I was like, if there's some other, you got to do some reading. You got to do some things that go into it. But it was a great night.
Yeah, it is too funny. Yeah, there's so many things that college basketball, like so many backgrounds that you get to learn about. It's always fun.
Yeah.
But I want to get into the book. And my first question is, like, where do you get the balls to write a book at 23?
Yeah, right, it's great. It was great for like going out to like bars and pubs, and girls would be like, what do you do? I'm like, I'm an author. Like, you that was the best part about it. So I cheated, right? I didn't write a book. What I did was I wrote a blog. Tom Watering, love the guy. When we went to Belgium for our European trip, he's like, I want to write a blog, and I'm going blue about like the trip. I was like, all right, I'm happy to do it. I like writing. So I did like 3 or 4 entries. Some other guys did some stuff too. And like Michigan fans love Michigan. They love Michigan basketball. They ate it up and read it. So as we got into my sophomore season, he's like, do you want to write a weekly blog? Just about the team, how it's doing and stuff off the court. And I was like, I'm sure I'll love it. I'm probably going to get sick of it after a couple of weeks, especially like if we're not playing well, there's like only so much you can say. But I said, sure, why not? And then over the course of 3 years, it kind of took on a life of its own where it became a pretty big deal. And we were winning a lot. We had a lot of Michigan is always in national TV. We had a lot of recognizable guys like you and Zach. And then it became Trey and Tim and Nick and Mitch. Like people ate these guys up. And I would kind of give the side off the court, right? Like people would see us play for 40 minutes, but they would love to hear about the three of us living together or the team dinners or the team plane rides. So I wrote the blog my sophomore, junior, senior year. And the culmination of that was us, you know, going to the Final Four and losing the national championship. So when it was done, I probably already had 250 pages written over 3 years. And a couple editors said, well, if you add like 20 pages on the Final Four, like you could turn this into a book because people love Michigan. They love Michigan basketball. So I wrote 20 more pages and we created a book. It started as an ebook. We can only buy it online. And it wants to be a certain threshold of sales. They're like, well, now we'll make it a coffee table book and make it a soft cover book. So Michigan fans loved it because it gave them inside access. And then the cool thing about the book is that you kind of see the rise of Michigan basketball because it starts after that really tough freshman year. And then it goes to my sophomore year where you hit that shot against Michigan State. And I always tell people like that's the inflection point for Michigan basketball is Stu's shot. Then it goes to a Big Ten championship, which was amazing for us. I'll never forget that day, the crushing loss to Ohio. And then coming back and having this unbelievable year, we get to the Final Four and win and all these characters and guys became larger than life. So it's really just kind of this transition and kind of inflection point of Michigan basketball that covers so much. And it kind of goes deeper than just what's on the court.
I mean, that's a hell of a rise when you lay it out like that. Like, I don't think I've ever fully taken that 4-year rise like that.
Yeah, I'll never forget, Stu. We had our freshman year, we had just lost to Northwestern. Like Sherman won for like 40 against us. We were like 1-6 in the Big Ten, probably like just over, or my sophomore year actually, you're a junior year, probably like over 500 overall. Remember listening to like 97 with a ticket and people like talking about like, does Michigan need a new head coach? Like, where is this program going? And I was like, wow, like this is crazy. Like, cause when you're a student athlete, you don't think about the business of it. You're like, we're playing, competing every day. And it like hit me like, wow, like we could be in trouble here. And then sure enough, we go on to, you know, win, I think 10 games in the Big Ten, win our first round game against Tennessee, almost beat Duke and like just take off. But midway through my sophomore year, junior year, like we were in last place in the Big Ten. And there people were questioning if Coach B was the right person to run the program. And now he's the winningest coach of all time and a Hall of Fame coach. But just shows how fragile and fickle sports are, right?
Again, and it's not talent. Like this talent will take you, but also there's like, it's managing the talent. So it's twofold. It's very much twofold. But yeah, I'll never forget. Like I tell people, I've talked about this ad nauseum now, but you know, it was like a couple years after, maybe 1 or 2 years after, and like Mark Snyder and some other media people were like, yeah, like Beilein was about to get fired. And I was like, what? You know, I'm just looking at the next day, the next game. And I'm like, really wasn't paying attention. And you know, really didn't appreciate that game for what it was and that season, the turnaround. And it's like, yeah, I guess it wasn't that. And the more I hear about it, and I just read the story where Dave Brandon came to him practice, like, yeah, I get a lot of emails. People want me to fire you. And I was like, good Lord, like that's quick. Like that's 3 years and he doesn't even have the guys that he wants. Like you gotta give a full rotation.
That's why sports are so hard because it's in most businesses, it's, you know, your competitor and you can both do well, right? Like in real estate, you can both do well in finance, you know, all these companies can have success. And sports, zero-sum game. Like Michigan and Michigan State, they both can't win tomorrow. One of them is going to lose and someone's going to be disappointed, and there's going to be pressure from that loss. And that's the same thing in the NBA or any sport, is there's only a finite number of wins and you both can't win. Where in business, in the tech sector, you can have two tech companies, and Facebook and name any other, Twitter, they can both have great years. Do they compete? For sure. But they can still, both have years where they beat their numbers and reporting and stuff like that. So it's why sports are under a microscope, is every game is analyzed and there's blogs, and then someone's going to lose it and they're going to write more articles on that.
Yeah, no, it just really never stops. I mean, it's a enviable and unenviable position at the same time. I want to get into a little more about you post-college and your career. You obviously work for the Pistons. We mentioned that you started out in real estate in Chicago. And I mean, I just always pictured you in the front office of an NBA team, like from early on. Like, I knew you weren't going to, follow your dad and be an agent. Like, I knew you kind of wanted to make your own way. And I think, real estate, you mentioned in articles, like, it's nice to be close to family, but did you know that you wanted to make the move to the NBA? Was that just a complete?
It was opportunity and luck. And I remember you always be like, Jay Bart's going to work for a team one day. Like, you would always say that. And I'd like, I don't think I am, because there's only 30 teams and I want to be in Chicago. So like, that's probably not that realistic. But I was working in real estate for General Growth Properties, which is now Brookfield, and loved it. I was leasing, which was selling. Anyone that does anything in life, you're selling, whether it's yourself or the product or service. I was living with five of my friends. We were going out six nights a week. Like, life was good. I was very happy. And then in the August 18th, 2015, my current boss and our vice chairman, minority owner, Aaron Tellum, called me, a random LA number. And so I'm looking for kind of a young guy to be my right hand to the Pistons. Is there any chance you're interested in coming? And Aaron went to Michigan Law School. He was a former agent, so he knew of my dad. They weren't friends, but they were respected rivals. And he knew me from playing at Michigan and kind of had heard about me. So I say, well, I would love to interview, kind of, who knows where this will go. I figured I wasn't going to get the job anyway. Fly to LA, interview with him. It goes well. He's like, all right, like, I need you to move here in a month and move to Detroit. I'm starting in a month and I want you to be here with me. So I was like, I'm 25 years old. I don't have a family. Like, this is the chance, time to take a chance. And like, I probably won't work. I'll probably be there for a year or two, but I might as well try it, because how many people get to work for the Pistons? So I moved to Detroit, don't really know anyone, because all my friends are my teammates, like you and Zach, and like, everyone's gone. Like, they don't stay in Michigan.
Right.
So kind of start a new life. And I basically is like assistant. Like, my job is to schedule his meetings. Like, we drive to work every day. We have breakfast. My first day, I take his shoes to get shined. Like, I was 25 years old. So like, when you start a new job young, like, you earn trust by doing small things well. And like, my job was to do those chores really well with a good attitude. If I did them well, he'd be like, all right, do more and more stuff. So from that, the Pistons went through this major transformation where we were in Auburn Hills and we were looking to move downtown, and Arn was in charge of kind of guiding us through that process. So I got lucky, like anything in life, you need luck and opportunity and take advantage of it. I got to be part of the deal team that kind of helped build the new arena and kind of basketball specific spaces to move downtown. We built a new practice facility. We're moving our G League team downtown. We kind of transformed our brand and business. So anytime you move a team from suburbs or any area to a new area, just that alone is going to be a major inflection point for revenue, right? It's a whole new game. So we had a ton of success, and a big part of it was that. And Aaron kept giving more and more responsibility, and I got to do more stuff and kind of be his right-hand person. Went from his assistant to special assistant, my role now, where I kind of help guide the day-to-day operations, whether that's helping figure out how to grow revenues or cut costs or all the real estate stuff we're doing in the city. Get to work with Aaron and Troy Weaver in basketball. So it's a very cool job because it's very, very broad, right? One day it's talking about building a practice facility. The next day it's talking about selling more tickets or sponsorship. But it all started with a random phone call in August, an opportunity, and then like self-deprecating and being humble enough where like I could go from leasing and making more money to kind of taking a big step back and being like, I'm literally taking someone's shoes to find.
Yeah.
I don't have any friends here, but I know if I do with a smile on my face and do it well, it like will lead to more and more stuff. And it did. And I'm lucky and happy to be where I am now.
I mean, you've always been one that that knows the importance of eating the shit, per se. Like, eat the shit, and then eventually, like, things will turn out great. Like, sometimes guys don't really understand that, especially, what it doesn't matter what it is, but for me specifically, I see a lot of guys go overseas, they can't, they're not good at doing that, and they blow up. But, like, where, you're going to assistant, you're shining shoes, like, were there conversations where it's like, okay, like, I can give you more? Was there, like, tests? Like, how does that...
I mean, it's a parallel to like being a walk-on as a freshman, right? Like, I almost didn't make it through our freshman year. Like, it was so hard. And like, you know, I'm what, 18 years old playing against Manny Harris and Deshaun Sims. And like, it's a grueling schedule. I got to do well in school. I'm pushing my body. Like, there were nights where I was like, why am I doing this? And I'm never going to play. But like, you again, it humbles you. You work really hard. You gotta be able to laugh at yourself and make fun of yourself and self-deprecate. And I made it through my freshman year. And then after that, like, I was bad our freshman year. And then my sophomore, like, I started to get my feet under me and like played good basketball and was able to contribute and kind of took off from there as far as my role. It was the same thing like working with Aaron. I was like, no one's gonna give me anything. We got the opportunity, but they're not gonna be like, Josh, go fix the Pistons. Like, why would they do that to a 25-year-old who's working in real estate? Like, you have to gain people's trust so they see in the attention to detail. How I would like get there early and stay late. I would ask questions. I would always be like, you know, the curiosity I think is so important. So I would just keep learning and learning. And I took finance classes at night to like, teach myself finance. Cause I think you gotta know the numbers, you gotta know the data. And I think my curiosity and wanting to keep working harder and harder, they would just give me more and more and more to the point where like, hey, like he can just do the job. Like let's just give it to him and run with it. And I you know I've done good enough where they keep giving me more.
Yeah, no, I would say so. I mean, you're overseeing construction and like budgeting for a $65 million project. Like it's funny to think about where you can go with just a little bit of patience and just small grinding and like just keeping at it. But again, like I always knew in some capacity you were going to be there. I've always told you that. Like you and me watching the NBA games on the couch and just, you know, you obviously knew how these teams worked a little bit. So yeah, it is fun to watch you to all that, see that come to fruition and play out. Like not exactly how I thought, obviously, but yeah, very much in the same manner. And you've done it so young too, which comes to my next question is Arn is, you know, heaps praises on you. And as everyone should, you've done a fantastic job. And he calls you the next Bob Myers, which is, you know, some big shoes to fill there. Like, do you foresee that? I know it's hard to talk about because you're in your position now and you do what you do, but like, do you foresee some type of future like that as a GM or like,
again, like, I think, I mean, Bob Myers, like that guy's going to the Hall of Fame too. He was like Aaron's right hand. So that's where the comparison comes from. I think these jobs are so like they're so hard, especially in the basketball side, right? Where it's, again, zero sum game. There's only 30 jobs. There's so much luck and there's so much variance involved. I love what I get to do. Like I love the NBA. I love the business side of it and being strategic and helping us operate and achieve our owner and Aaron's vision and goals. So I think he says that, which is amazing. There's probably like similarities and like we work hard and we both were basketball players and play a lot and. Are humble in that sense, have empathy. It's one of Arn's favorite words, but I'm just like enjoying the day. Like I get to go to NBA basketball games, I get to go watch our team play tonight. I love what I do and I get through the lens of basketball, the prism of basketball. So life is good. And if I keep working hard and doing it the right way, then everything else will take care of itself.
Yep, exactly. All right, before we get you out of here, we got four questions pretty quick. One, I'm kind of just jumping this on you real quick. So if you don't have an answer, it's fine.
Yeah.
Have like a go-to beeline story that you love to tell or like something that pops up. I know this is not easy. I'm not dealing with these kind of questions.
I got so many. I love Coach B. He's an amazing man. I guess there's probably so many stories.
I know there's so many that like they just get mixed
I'll tell
up.
A story about you, right? So he I think you're gonna know what I'm gonna say, but Coach B hated people that were late. He's always was being early on time. So he's like, before the year, it was like, J-Bart, like, you live with Stu. Do not let him be late. And I was like, well, Coach, like, sometimes we come from class. Like, I'm not always with them. Like, and we don't, like, I'm not sleeping in the same room as the guy. He's like, no, you're in charge of Stu. Do not let him be late. If you are, there's going to be consequences. So I'm like, well, all right. If it's if, cause I don't like running. So I'm like, all right, Stu, I'm going to be on you. So literally the first day of practice, first day of official practice, we practice at 6 a.m. And for those of you who don't know on the show, Stu's not a great early riser. So So it's like 5 a.m. I wake up, I go in Stu's room. I'm like, Stu, are you up? Like, we got to go. It's like, yeah, I'm up. Leave me alone. I'm going at my own pace. But I'm like, are you up? Yes, I'm up. So Zach and I leave and Stu's driving behind us. It's 5:55, 5:56 on the court. No Stu. I'm like, well, these kids cutting it awfully close. Coach Beilein's like, Josh, I gave you one job. It's the first day. It's 5:59. It's got about 30 seconds. Otherwise, you're running 17s for the whole week. Literally, my heart sings because there's nothing I hate more than running 17s. 6:01, no Stu. Stu went back to sleep. So I think you got to like at 6:45 or 7. And I was like, Coach, be like, please, like, I can't run 17s all week. And he's like, no, you and Zach are going to run 17s for a full week. I'm going to put a chair at midcourt and let Stu watch you.
So that's a funny insight that he had you know, rein me in, which it was only the morning. It was only the morning stuff because I like had such big sleeping problems, but like 6 a.m. And he always did that. He always did the morning practices to test guys. Like, all right, you're going to be up and get early and like get going. It's like, it's going to be a test. And I'm like, can you test me physically at like 3 p.m.? Like I do great at 3 p.m. Yeah. But I had such a problem sleeping and I'll never forget that, you know, I show up late. I get to the practice. Like, all right, we're going to run. Zach, you and Zach run with me that first day. We run the first 17. And I mean, Zach is just livid. And you're just like, you're eating it. Like, yeah, all right. Like, I knew this was going to happen. This is what Beilein said was going to happen. Zach is just livid. Luckily, Beilein said, I think I like explained it a little to him. I don't remember exactly what happened, but he's like, okay, you guys don't have to run. Stu, keep running. And then I ran like the full week. And I'm like, after practice, you came up to me and said, dude, I woke you up and like made sure like twice, like that you were ready to go. And I'm like, no, you didn't. Like, I didn't remember any, like literally blacked it out. Like I could have.
Every morning practice, the rest of our lives, I would like sit on your bedside until you got up and went into the shower. But like, dude, it's like, you had the ability to run for days. Like you could do that. Yeah. I'm like, I'm a 6'4" Jewish kid. Like I can't do that. So like, when he would say that, like, for a week, you have to run 17s, like, it's over. Like, I'm not getting through practice for the whole week running 17s. You could do that. But thank God he cut it off after the first day because your boy might not have made it through.
No, that could have been really bad. That could have been really bad. Yeah, that stuff was funny. I'll never forget that stuff. Okay, three more questions. One is, your last game was against Louisville, national championship game. And you have a very different perspective. I love everyone's perspective when I ask former players this question. But if you can, try and capture the locker room and how you felt, specifically, personally, yourself, after that loss and walking off, and then sort of the week or two after, like, did it linger with you? And how did you process that whole thing?
That's a great question. I think that it's a phenomenal question. One of my like most vivid memories, I'll never forget the locker room after losing to Louisville. So I was like, I didn't go the same pathway you're supposed to go. I just didn't want to shake anyone's hand. Cause when you're that close to like greatness, it is so, so hard. Cause it changes your life, right? Like even like getting to the Final Four changed my life. Like I probably don't have this job without that. But like, if you win, different level. So, I'm the first one in the locker room. I took a water bottle and was like, whipped it in my locker. It explodes and spills all over my clothes. Like I'm soaking wet when I change. But first we were telling the story. So it's total backfire. I'm the first one in there. I hear like security guy be like, is everyone all right in there? And people just file in. And then we sit in our chairs and Coach B gets up there and he starts crying. Crying tears of probably happy and sad that just what this team means, you know, how we came together. And then you let everyone that wanted to speak go up there. I went up there and kind of just said, like, you guys gave me, like, the year of my life, right? Like, to go to a Final Four and get to be on CBS and meet Jim Nance and ride around in police escorts. Like, I get to tell my kids about this for the rest of my life. And I was crying. And then the most impressive thing is, like, not a lot of people spoke, but our freshmen went up as a group. and just like thanked everyone. I remember Glenn Robinson, who didn't speak a ton, was just like what this group meant to him and how the fun he had, and how he looks up to us forever and how we would always stay together. Because I think the best part about Michigan teams is they're all good kids. Like, I still talk to Trey and Tim and you and Zach, obviously, but even the guys who have become stars, Caris LeVert, Spike Allgraff, like, we still all text. We text in groups just because of those memories and the bonding of it. So I'll never forget kind of that locker room. And then we took the bus back and all our fans were at the hotel, and everyone was cheering for us. And we were so, so upset because you can feel it. You're so close.
Yeah.
And then we all kind of we sat outside in our hallway. It was just what we all did. It's all 15 of us. We sat outside in our hotel hallway and just told stories about like the year and the journey. And we're up to like 3 a.m, just like laughing and crying, and because you couldn't go anywhere. There was like police on the floor to make sure you didn't leave the hotel. And we just, I'll never forget the night of just telling stories.
That's a cool ass story. That's really good. I like that. I'm sure the week after, like, you just gain appreciation for the whole thing.
And then, like, I remember I texted my cousin, like, for 3 days after. I'm like, what am I supposed to, like, do all day? Because I, like, woke up, like, 8 a.m. Because I couldn't, like, I'm so used to waking up early for our classes. And I was like, I got nothing to do. Like, what do you guys, like, normal college students do? It's like, well, you have to stay up later and sleep longer. You have to, like, hang out with your friends. Like, don't you have friends? Like, you have to, like, reinvent yourself a little bit. But I remember, I'll never forget vividly, like, the week after, I would be texting my friends, like, normal college students, being like, these are very long days around here. What do you guys do?
Yeah. Well, partying, Josh. You had to go enjoy. You had to have enjoyed that last month.
I did. I found the rhythm. It took a little bit, but I found the rhythm. Yeah. Instead of running suicides, I was running with my friends on South Eagle, wherever it was.
Yeah. Okay. Two more questions. This is a quick hitter. Ricks or Skeeps?
Skeeps. Not close.
God, I love this. I'm so surprised everyone is in agreement with me on this. All right. Last question. If there is one thing that you learned at Michigan, something that sticks out to you, or maybe that you still carry with you to this day, it's a lesson learned, maybe a phrase or something, like, what sticks out to you that you took away from your time at Michigan?
I think just like, it was the first time in my life where like I had like real success, like our team had success. Like, because you're a kid, you're in high school, like, you don't know. But then like to see like what goes into having success, I think I always say like players that are individuals who come from playing a sport in college are so far ahead of the curve because they've been operators. Like, I just think what I learned from playing at Michigan is like what it takes to run a program, what it takes to be a cog in that program, what it takes to be a steward of moving Michigan basketball forward. So whether it's the scheduling that goes into a given day or my role being a leader or just seeing how to make this machine work, I realize like what goes into it and how delicate and fragile it is. But if you really, really, really care about it and work really, really hard, like, you can achieve anything. I mean, and it's so cliche because you can achieve anything, but like literally, like we almost got there. Like we got to a Final Four, and you realize like all the groundwork that had to get laid. Like, there was no skip steps. There were things we had to do to get there, but it just shows me of like my job now, like, all the small things matter. Like, we do all these small things right. It gives us a chance. We almost lost to Kansas. Like, we're one shot away, but you put yourself in position to be in position to have success. And I think that's my big takeaway.
No, for sure. I mean, cliches are cliches for a reason. And when you get that experience, like, it becomes real, and then you can take that away from it. So it's a great answer. Jay Bart, I love you, man. I always love talking to you. I don't know why we don't talk more. Well, you're a busy guy. But we got to talk more.
I'm always happy to come on, man. I'm always happy. Just let me know.
I would love it. I would love it. Whenever this is done, like, you, me, and Z got to get together for sure. Like, I am dying for that. So
I'm all in. Just let me know when.
Well, I appreciate you, man. Thanks for coming on. And hopefully we can do this again another time.
Let's do it when Michigan's deep in March Madness. I'm in. Me, you, and Zach.
Oh, yeah, definitely. All right, man.
Thanks, dude.